Time now for the next installment. I don't know. I want to come up with a name for these segments. Our election electioneering segments. I love this time of year. It's wonderful having candidates into KFUG and sitting and spending some time and talking with them. Today is no exception. Joined live in the studio, Darren Short. How you doing today, Darren?
Hello, Paul. I'm doing great. Thanks
so
for having me.
Stipulate for everybody. Candidate for District 1, Board of Supervisors. You having a good day? We're in the home stretch, John was
having
saying the other
night.
Having
a good day. We are in the home stretch, yes. Just a few more days yet. Looking forward to this.
Are you out knocking on doors and such?
Certainly knocking on doors, doing a bunch of that, talking to a lot of great people. Yes.
And also joining us live in the studio from the Wild Rivers Outpost, it is Jessica Samar, Crescent City Bureau.
Hello, everyone. Yeah, I am the Bureau.
I am the Bureau of One, exactly. First question. Oh, first off, a couple of thoughts. I loved the forum the other night. That was just I posted on that. I just had a great time watching everybody interact up there. All the people, all the locals here.
Yeah, judging from your post, it did look like you had a good time. It was a good time. It was very well put on by the Del Norte County Associate of Realtors. I enjoyed myself, and I think the other candidates did too.
Seemed like such a cohesive group. When at the end of my post, it was saying, you know, after Board of Supervisors have been pretty divided and divisive over the last 8 years or so, and looks like that's about to change. No matter who wins,
I hope so. I hope so. A cohesive group is better for the county.
Yeah,
all the way around. And it was that way at the city council as well. We were a very cohesive group, and I thought that during my time there, we did some good things for the city.
So you had you were appointed for the first, and you had was it a full like half session you were appointed for, or was it a year? What was that first appointment?
That's just about correct. Richard Ania, partway into his first year, decided to hang it up, and I believe he moved out of town. So I was appointed, and then rightfully so, the city said that I should be elected at the first opportunity.
Yeah.
Don't want to take the power away from the voters. I totally agree with that. So then I was elected at that two-year mark. So I spent 3 years on the city council.
Yeah. Any takeaways from that? What did you learn being a city council member?
Oh, goodness, that our government moves way too slow for my liking. that was something that I guess I just didn't realize until I sat there trying to, you know, get things done. And
do you remember a specific instance when that was the issue for you?
It seemed like every time we wanted to change a municipal code or something that needed to be done, it was, you know, 30 days for the reading, and then it's got to sit for 30 days, and then we change it and come back in 30 days, and I understand the process now, but it was just agonizingly slow in some cases.
Yeah. What can you do about that? Because it's not going to change on the Board of Supervisors.
It's not going to change. No, it's not going to change. And like I said, I get it. I get the process, because you have to give the public a chance to weigh in.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, rushing something through without the public's input, you know, properly so is wouldn't be the correct way to do it. So I don't know that can really change significantly, you know.
Just so you have to find that place inside that you can,
yes,
you can embrace that process.
Embrace the process, yes.
So you've had, not just the time on the city council, but you've done time in what I believe to be kind of where the rubber meets the road when it comes to local government and policy. You were on the planning commission, correct?
Correct. Yeah, I did about a year and a half on the planning commission prior to becoming a city councilman, and there was another bit of learning process, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Zoning, how to build your community correctly, you know, according to those zones, and complying with environmental laws as you develop different areas, and that was another learning process, but it was fun, and we were able to do some pretty interesting things. I mean, some as simple as designing what our bus stops are going to look like, or our the street signs with a little lighthouse on the top of it down toward Battery Point. You know, those were the kind of the fun things
that
we got to do.
It's like the affecting real change. I mean, we're talking signs, we're talking things like that, but when you get down to it, I mean, that's kind of what local government, at least in my estimation, one of the kinds of things local government needs to be concerned with, you know.
Yes, I agree.
Potholes and streetlights and such. And I don't know, it just seems like everybody who ends up on either the city council or the board of supervisors, they should probably do some time in the planning commission, because you get into the fibers of this community, I think, a little more directly in that setting.
I know it certainly helped me out being on the planning commission first. It was definitely a stepping stone. Kind of got me, for one, acquainted with city staff and then the processes that we have to go through. So it was definitely helpful.
Mm-hmm. So also, since we're going through the your resume here, you've got like 30 years in each. You've got 30 years in corrections, right? You retired as a captain, right?
Not quite that much. I did a little over 23 years.
23 years, okay.
Yep.
But 30 years as a firefighter.
Over 30 years.
Over 30, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I joined in October of 89. So that's how long I've been on the fire department. But yeah, 23 mm-hmm. years as a starting out as a correctional officer. But yeah, I worked my way up to captain, which is a management position.
When did you retire?
The end of April last year.
Last year, okay, because I started going, I think I saw you one time in the admin building there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Because the radio show started out there.
Yeah, yeah, we started doing the podcast. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And I think I saw you one time and then I didn't see you anymore, and it turns
that's
out.
That's right. So on my way out. Yeah.
So what could you take from those two experiences as a firefighter and all the time spent doing that stuff and then in corrections doing that?
As a firefighter, I can put myself into the homeless situation that we have mm-hmm. here in Crescent City area. We go to homeless camps quite a bit, and we get to talk to those folks on a pretty regular basis. Mm-hmm. So it kind of brings it home. You know, I think I have a pretty good idea about where just about every homeless camp is.
Not bad, yeah.
You know, and you talk to some folks and what they're living through. It just brings it home for me and lets me know that, you know, we need to definitely work on that situation.
Can you describe the people, some of the people that you talk with? Because I think when people think homeless, they think of, you know, people panhandling on the street or, you know, just kind of, I mean, who are some of the folks that you've interacted with?
That is true. I think people sometimes generalize who the homeless population is, and it's a wide variety of people. You know, you've got your group that is in need of mental health services. You know, there's a guy not too far away from us here at the radio station that has been homeless for 30 years and doesn't want to not be homeless. You know, he doesn't want to live according to HUD rules. And I've been to his camp. It's not full of garbage like we've seen in the media. He lives in a relatively clean camp, and he's been doing it a long time. Another guy we go on pretty regularly is a diabetic, so we see him on a relatively regular basis. And the other day he said he ran out of insulin. And I said, you know, I'm a diabetic. I told him I just bought a vial of insulin at Walmart. You know, that's the cheapest place you can get it. It's $24. And he goes, I don't have $24. And it just was kind of, you know, kind of heart-wrenching on one hand.
I don't know
if he has other substance abuse problems or anything like that. I have not been to his camp. He usually comes out and meets us on the street.
Oh wow!
So those are just a couple of examples that you see.
Well, let's do. I mean, that got us into the homeless thing. I'd like to get in now. We've talked about what you've done and what's got you here. I want to talk about maybe your vision for what you hope to accomplish on the Board of Supervisors. But first, let me remind our listeners, 10:41 the time, KFUG Community Radio, joined live in the studio, Jessica Sainar from the Wild Rivers Outpost and Darren Short, who's seeking election to the Board of Supervisors, District 1. Okay, good. Got that done. So what would you like to do? Why do you want to be a supervisor?
I'd like to Actually, True North has kind of got the ball rolling along with Lori Cowan, but I'd like to be an advocate and work with the community partners and get a successful program like Hope Village here. We've heard about Hope Village over in Medford. It seems to be a really successful program, and I would like to do what I can to bring that here. It's a transitional housing program that brings homeless people to be able to move into permanent housing. And while I understand that that's not going to take care of our entire homeless problem, because it is definitely a multifaceted issue, I think it's a great step in the right direction that will give these people an avenue to settle down in a home of their own and get off of the streets.
I know we've had presentations and things here before the various boards. Do you know, has anybody from local government gone over and checked it out firsthand? Because I think there's something, it's Medford, and then I think it's also Grants Pass.
Grants Pass is getting one this year.
Gotcha.
I don't know if it's in place yet, but in 2020 they're supposed to to build their, it's not called Hope Village this time, it's I can't remember the name.
I forget what it's called, too.
Yeah.
But it's happening.
But it's the same nonprofit. Rogue Retreats is the nonprofit that's building it in Grants Pass as well. But in answer to your question, I don't know that anybody has gone over there firsthand. I can't imagine that they wouldn't, being Smedford's only a couple hours away.
It's a pretty easy trip.
But I don't know of anybody. I don't have any personal knowledge of that.
Wow. So the homeless, I mean, other issues that you'd like to address, and homelessness, of course, is big and means a lot, especially to District 1, it seems.
It seems like primarily that's where the homeless are focused. District 1, District 2 in part. I'd like to, another way to battle homelessness is to bring more mental health help to Del Norte County. We really are, and I said this at the forum, we really are in a desert of mental health help, mental health professionals here. Getting help at Rima Vista dictates that you have to be on Medi-Cal. Mm-hmm. So to get that Medi-Cal card, you have to have a diagnosis. So you have to find a mental health professional to help you with that.
Yeah.
So that means you're going to go out of town and you're going to wait a long time to even get a session with a therapist or a mental health professional. So it's really tough for the people who need it. I mean, outside the homeless population to get the mental health help we need. Heather Snow at DHHS, she's got many vacant positions in her mental health group. And I would like to partner with her and possibly Rima Vista and try and figure out how to recruit and retain more mental health professionals. And I think that may largely center around their pay scale.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to have to work on that as a county.
Is that something that the county government has influence over? It seems like this is, we're sort of bridging, private sector, public sector, nonprofit sector, all of these things, and that all of this seems to happen right in the intersection of all of that.
You make a good point, and it's similar to another thing I'd like to work on is our sheriff's deputies. We have quite a few vacant positions there. We know that we're losing a lot of our leadership to retirements here in the next little
next
bit.
Next year, yeah.
Yeah.
Next few months, even.
And next few months, that's true. And I'd like to partner with the sheriff to try and figure out ways to recruit and retain again. But when it comes down to it, the sheriff has his budget, and he gets to do with it what he wants, and it's completely outside of the control of the county.
Mm-hmm.
So you're right. There is some hurdles to jump there, but I think so playing that supporting role on the part of the supervisors to the sheriff and to the director of DHHS and partnering with folks to trying to find some creative ideas to attract people here is something we've got to do. We've got to work on it.
Yeah, in several different areas. In different percentage. Yeah, exactly. Okay.
I was
just
sorry.
Because I just feel like, because I know you're kind of under the weather, and I feel like I've been talking a whole bunch, and I wanted to make sure I wasn't talking over you.
You're not.
Okay, good.
Thank you, though.
So, other issues that need to be addressed for countywide stuff. Homelessness, of course, is huge. But like Last Chance Grade, all the big ticket items everybody brings up and talks about.
You know, you said something about me knocking on doors, and it reminded me of the phone call I had with Senator McGuire the other night. He wanted to talk to me when he found out I was running, so he called me, and he was curious. You know, he says, "Hey, you've been knocking on doors." Well, yeah, you got to knock on doors. And you know, he wondered, what are people saying? He said, "Give me your top three. What are they?" And I said, in order: homelessness, crime, Last Chance Grade. It was a really easy question to answer.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that is what's on people's minds mostly. Last Chance Grade, we've definitely got the ball rolling. Mm-hmm. We're pretty hopeful that this project is going to come to fruition. Of course, it's not going to come, you know, as fast as some people would like, you know.
Right. I'm sorry. You even mentioned that you know, you mentioned when we talked the 2039 completion deadline, mm-hmm. which means that they're going to start construction way earlier than that. I think you said
2031 is the estimated start date for construction.
Yeah, and you pointed out that's not that far away.
That's 11 years. And to some, that's a long time. But that's breaking ground in 11 years. That's... I guess maybe I'm getting too used to these long government processes, but especially after talking with the geotechnical engineer that came and did the geotechnical open house a few weeks ago, I got to spend some one-on-one time with him, and he talked about the alternate routes and doing studies on some of the existing slides that are within those routes and those kind of things, and how long that takes, and they're still working on Last Chance Grade and talking about ways to shed the water off the side of the mountain so it won't move so much. Doing things like that, and he talked about how it seemed to me like the longest route, I think, is Route A. Mm-hmm. And he
says from the bottom on the other side.
From the bottom, yep. Going through the largest majority of the route is in land that has already been logged.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of quote unquote the easy way because you don't have all the challenges of, you know, court battles or
right.
the environmental.
So it slips mostly onto Simpson land. Is that what it is back up there? Or is it.
I think it still belongs to the park.
Oh, okay.
It was old Miller Redwood land.
It's just not old growth.
Yeah.
It's just not old growth. Correct.
Yeah.
But then he gets to the point where we're just a matter of less than a mile from the end of that route through old growth redwoods to tie into the existing road mm-hmm. above Last Chance Grade.
Mm-hmm.
And his comment was that it will almost be easier to dig under the trees and build a tunnel.
Oh, man.
Or build a bridge up in the canopy of the trees than to fight the court battle that's going to result as the result of trying to cut down an old growth redwood.
Now, that mile, is that in all the other routes as well, if it's close to the end and near the tie-in, or is it just in that one?
Yeah, it's in the other routes where, you know, where they tie in vary by not very much.
Yeah.
But yes, that is the big worry.
Wow.
And it's... I got to commend them. They're trying to bring in those stakeholders that are, you know, those groups that will be taking part in those court battles early on.
But that's like UNESCO, right? I mean, is that the World Heritage Site part that they're talking about up there?
That is one route. It just amazes me that we have to notify the UN
to put
if we're gonna. work up there. It's really, really amazing.
That's a particular, that's a Del Norte specific challenge, I guess, then, right? Yeah. You know, how many other supervisors have, okay, let the UN know what we're doing.
Well, I wonder if other, you know, UNESCO World Heritage sites, you know, places that are housing these areas have to do similar things.
Yeah, yeah.
In order to get going. Because to me, accelerating the project, I think would, well, I don't know if I'm allowed to interject my opinion, but it would be to me almost inviting trouble, like almost inviting delays, because you're going to get those folks that are going to be like, okay, we're going to take this to court because it's a World Heritage site. You shouldn't be able to do this.
I agree. And I think that's what is taking the majority of the time in this projected timeline that Caltrans has, is that they are going to do what they can to mitigate that problem right there at the end, you know, right when the design phase is done and we're mm-hmm. just about to break ground. Some court is going to file, or, you know, somebody's going to file an injunction.
Yeah, yeah.
So if we can hit that on the front end and work to where those groups will be satisfied with the plan, mm-hmm. that'll be huge. I mean, the 199 project alone, we've been in court battles for 11 years now, 11 mm-hmm. plus years. So we need last chance grade. We need to not be tied up in court for 10 to 15 years, just, and to an immense cost to the people as well.
Yeah, just even thinking, every time I go over that, I remember just in my mind, I can see, having done it, I'm sure everybody here locally, you can see this now, and how much it's changed, how much last chance grade has changed, just in my conscious memory, right? You know, that one dip where the patch is there.
The big dip didn't used to be there.
Didn't used to be there, yeah.
Did not used to be there.
Cool. And yeah, every time I'm driving, especially when my kids were younger, every time we'd have to stop at the light, we got to sit on top of this.
Right.
It seems counterintuitive, but yeah.
I think I was telling Jessica during our interview, when I came home from school, my wife and I were traveling back. We're listening to the radio as we're coming into town, and Caltrans made an announcement then, because the road would fall and then they'd overlay pavement, and it would fall some more and they'd overlay. They said at one point, one place in the on the grade, the asphalt was 52 feet deep.
Oh God! Wow, they patched it up that much.
They patched
it
that much, and that was 1988. So, who knows?
Wow.
Who knows what it is now?
One thing I like to ask everybody running for office, because it's just a pet issue of mine. There's a dynamic, I assume, being in public office. Correct me if I'm wrong, but there's a dynamic of, like, you know, you balance the vision, the wishes of your constituency, the people you represent, with your own sort of agenda, I guess, or just, you know, your background perspective, what you bring to it. How do you see that dynamic, that interplay? Are you elected to represent your constituency like 100%? Are you elected to achieve something, a vision that you've presented to your constituency that you bring to the thing, and your role is now to execute that?
I view my role as being a representative mm-hmm. of the people. One of the questions that the realtors had, one of the 23, was, do you have any pet projects? And my initial thought was, well, I'm not going to need 2 minutes for this one, because the answer is no.
Yeah. Okay.
No, I don't. Been pretty wide open about what I hope to accomplish, and there's nothing else there.
Mm-hmm.
I do believe that I need to represent the people that are in my district. And I get in trouble with some people. Like, we had the marijuana question that was asked of me at the forum. My mother-in-law is against the, you know, passage of Prop 64,
mm-hmm.
and she hasn't appreciated me dealing on the city council like I did, and I do believe that the voters have spoken, you know. While I personally believe that, you know, just kicking the door open and having a free-for-all probably wouldn't be the healthiest for our community, and I don't believe that's what the intent of mm-hmm. the law was, so we
but yet that's what's happened in other places too, and we all had the chance to see how legalization's played out in Humboldt and what a mess that's been, too. So it's nice to learn from that.
True, true. And Blake Inskor traveled down there with, I believe, Heidi Keim went with him during that time. And they saw some good and bad. Mm-hmm. And, you know, trying to learn what would be best for passing our ordinances here. And like I said there, you know, we passed the ordinances minimally complying with the law that the voters voted in.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not keeping us from going back and revisiting it and making some changes if we need to. It's the usual order of business. When mm-hmm. somebody comes up with an idea or something, we'll take a look, and if it's good for the community, we'll move toward that. So my personal beliefs, I mean, in that is, I mean, that's, I guess, is the best example, because I don't believe that recreational marijuana is good for our community, but I voted the way I thought the constituents were in agreement, and mm-hmm. that, I mean, they showed us in the polls, and that we should allow that.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a conflict for me, but I think it's going to be okay.
So how does that kind of philosophy translate into what county supervisors are doing now, which is to, they started off with a very limited commercial cannabis ordinance, and now they're looking at expanding it a little bit. They've agreed to reduce the setback zones between one cannabis retail and another. They've reduced the setbacks from cannabis businesses and schools to from 1,000 feet to 600 feet, and they're looking at making some areas of Smith River to be okay for cannabis businesses to operate. Do you support those actions? And if not, why?
I do. I understand the school setback issue was brought about because we discovered that Juvenile Hall was, quote unquote, a school.
Right.
While I, Paul's chuckling.
I like that.
I totally get it.
So yeah, like Rob moves over there and he opens business. He's got Sticky Grove and everything like that. And then everybody in the community kind of goes, "Oh right, Juvie." And it's like we remembered
exactly.
It all after the fact.
Exactly.
Yeah, and it's been there the whole time.
Right.
You know, and you read the intent of the law, and it's pretty clear, in my opinion, that we don't want the children in our community or the youth to have easy access. You know, let's not walk across the street from the school and have access to recreational marijuana. I don't think the kids in juvie are getting out and walking around that much. So
yeah, right. Yeah.
I think I don't know if we could have drafted an ordinance that made that exception locally. I did hear the argument, and especially after they gave him Rob the business license, then they went, "Oh, like you said,
oh man."
I don't mean
to laugh at our local government. I really
it's kind of like they stumbled into that.
Yeah. It truly is. It truly is. But then you're committed now.
Yeah.
Are you going to really yank his permit away from him after the first year? Well, you know, then you're going to get sued, and that's going to cost, you know, who knows how much to the county. To, you know, really boils down to the taxpayers of the county. So I understand them reducing that to mitigate the loss to the taxpayer. As far as commercial growing in Smith River, I missed that conversation. But if somebody is going to kick off that football and see what they can do with it, more power to them. Like I say, the voters have spoken.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
So if we can make a go of it and do good things, I I guess we'll see how it goes.
I think you would maybe fortunately I think you were all, you'd gone you'd left the you because you didn't it was you just you you resigned retired from the city council. I forget what that was.
It came up to election time.
Uh-huh. And did you just not declare? Is that
I
what happened?
I did not declare.
Okay, that's what
happened. I intended on applying to be the fire chief.
Okay.
Because Steve had had his stroke, mm-hmm. and we knew that Steve wasn't going to return as fire chief.
Right, right.
And I had put some thought into that. Somebody, sometimes they ask you a question like, hey, are you going to be the fire chief? And my response was, yeah, this weekend is my turn. I'm going to be the fire chief. And it just did not click. And he looked at me and he goes, no, are you going to be the fire chief? And that kind of took me back a little bit. And I was like, no, well, I guess I could be the fire chief, mm-hmm. you know? So after some thought and talking about it with my wife, I intended to do that. So I didn't run for city council. Certainly wouldn't be fair to the voters if I was voted in to city council and then a matter of months later go, oh, hey, sorry, mm-hmm. can't be a city councilman anymore. I didn't think that would be the right thing to do. So I didn't declare.
Mm-hmm.
Then after Steve passed away, it was kind of an attention getter for me and really took the wind out of my sails for wanting to do the job.
Really?
Because I retired from the prison young. But Steve was 63.
Wow. Yeah.
And that would make my daughter 23 if a similar event happened to me.
Ooh.
And I'd kind of like to be here for my family a little longer than that. I know it's a job that takes its toll,
mm-hmm.
you know. Obviously, it did for Steve. I mean, and Steve served this community better and more actively than anybody I can think of. Mm-hmm. To run calls 24/7, 7 days a week, is not only stressful on your body, but stressful for family life. Incredibly rewarding. Don't get me wrong. It's really a rewarding thing to be on the fire department and to help people. But that's what it boiled down to is when he passed, it was kind of a message that no, this isn't the right thing for you.
Wow,
this is not the right thing for you to do.
So, that had to be difficult. I mean, 30 plus years, you know, yourself as a firefighter.
It really, really was. Yeah.
Huh.
So I'm still going to stick around the fire department. You know, I'm a battalion chief there, so I kind of have a little leverage on, you know, trying to get things to go the way I think they should go. Mm-hmm. But you know, it boils mm-hmm. down to the chief, and we have a great one right now. Bill Gillespie is just a great, great guy. We're really fortunate to get him up from Humboldt County. And I just love working with the guy. He's a great all-around leader, knows his fire business really, really well, and is serving our community like our community deserves.
Wow, that's excellent. I had no idea that you'd faced mortality like that
yeah.
over this issue. That's yeah. like, wow.
It really was an attention getter, yeah.
So I brought up your exit from the city council because I think if memory serves, that means that you weren't there sitting through all the Martin v. Boise stuff, right? And the ordinances, the homeless ordinances, the parking, you know, sleeping in cars and everything.
That's correct. Yeah.
That does affect the district that you're running to represent the Board of Supervisors very heavily. Any thoughts on all of that, on Martin v. Boise, on the subsequent ordinances that the city council passed?
The Boise decision made it tough. Mm-hmm. That was a challenge. And we are, I mean, as the city and the Board of Supervisors are working through that, and we're finding little ways to make it better. I mean, finding out what Boise meant and what it didn't mean right. on the backside of that. doing things, small things like Lori Cowan had signs put up at all the turnouts on Pebble Beach Drive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no camping allowed there. That's in compliance with the Boise decision.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we're discovering these little things bit by bit and just, you know, realizing that we don't have to have the, or we don't have to let the homeless camp all day long in Beachfront Park, you know, and down on our beaches and still be in compliance with that decision.
Mm-hmm.
You know, being out of compliance with that decision would be a disaster for the coffers of the city and the county.
Even if subsequently downstream that the city won any sort of court battle that ensued, it's still going to be a big hit. It's still going to be a lose-lose.
It's
sort
still
of situation.
Your municipalities that win in those decisions still are stuck with the bill.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other side does not have to pay when they're fighting a municipality. Some people may not realize that, but yes, it would still be a big hit. Win or lose, just exactly like you said. So we're working through that little by little. I think some creative thinking is what we need to continue with. Somebody brought up something like, I think the word was staging areas.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
A while back. And from what I understand, it was shut down pretty quickly.
Really? Because from my experience, it's taken a good 7 or 8 years for that idea to be bludgeoned to death. And it seems now that what Jerry Johnson was initially talking about from the VFW and working with veterans and homeless veterans was that staging area, the idea of it providing wraparound services and things like that, has been folded into the whole Hope Village thing. So it seems like it's still alive in my mind, but I cut you off. I'm sorry. Please finish your
thought. Well, you apparently know more about the staging area than I do. I heard very little about it and you know, how the rumor mill goes in Crescent City.
Mm-hmm. I'm interested now. What'd you hear?
Right. It's like I heard it on Facebook, so it's got to be true, right?
Yeah.
What I heard was that it was brought up, and just because of who brought it up, it
was
shut down.
I was going to ask that, actually.
Yes.
Yeah.
And again, that's, we need to explore these ideas, no matter who brings them up.
Mm-hmm.
And I get the world we live in right now is not very friendly in some cases on the board, and that we just need to get by that and get to a better place where we can work together.
Do you want to translate all that?
Yeah.
Do I want to translate?
Do we need to translate?
Do we need to translate? Okay, we won't translate if you want to say it like that. But I think you're absolutely right. I think we are actually coming to a point now with this, with the incoming board, whoever wins, that sort of dynamic is going to be diffused and people will be on the same page.
It'll definitely change.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, if not totally like be diffused, but hopefully that divisiveness will be lessened somewhat.
I was going to ask if the staging area idea had died for that very reason, because it occurred to me that might have been why. Just
like I say, that's just what I heard through the rumor.
Through the rumor.
Yes, and we know that's incredibly accurate.
Getting an inside scoop into Downward Politics here with Darren Short on KFUG Community Radio. Darren's running for election to the Board of Supervisors, District 1. We're just a couple of weeks away from that. Darren, of course, live here in the studio, as is Jessica Sainar from the Wild Rivers Outpost. It is 10 minutes into the 11 o'clock hour. You tuned to KFUG LP Crescent City. It's a little late on the legal ID. Apologies, but there you go. Okay. All right. So I like people who are elected and want to achieve like nuts and bolts kind of things. Not the sexy stuff. We're not going to have big, you know, big 6 hour long things and, you know, but just potholes and street lights. Are there other issues in your, geez, give me a heads up when you're going to do that. And I also want to say there have been times when people listen back, when you listen back to this interview, where you'll say something and you'll hear Jessica kind of go, it's because she's sick. That was not an exasperated sigh of commentary or anything. She's sick over there.
Can you really hear me do that?
A couple of times I did. It's okay. I didn't want to say anything, but then now I did.
Okay. Well, now I'm going to be all self-conscious, but that's all right. That's not a new feeling.
Yeah, I know, huh? Yeah, you can deal with that. But so other you know, just sort of that kind of nuts and bolts sort of things that you'd like to accomplish. You know, everybody, you know, other issues that come up maybe farther down on that list that you provided for Senator McGuire. But, you know, Front Street, that's in your district, correct?
Front Street's in my district, but it's in the city.
Yes, you don't have to deal with that, right? Is there anything the county can offer, though, as far as, you know, assistance, a kick in the pants? I know things are moving on that front. I know
it,
there's funding.
It is for half of it, yes. Mm-hmm. We got funding for half of it, so that's good news for the people of the city. While I was on the city council, my thought was that the city and county road department could work together somehow. Crazy vision of not knowing how the world works was that we could send crews out with the road crew and we could use their equipment and help them on one of their projects. Then they could come into town, you know, because they have the equipment. The city does not have the equipment.
And
to
that's
do roads.
That's a great human sort of idea to come up with, right?
And I was like, I got a great idea. Yes. So I went to Jay Serena and I said, hey, can we do this? And he goes, it's a great idea, Darren, but all of our equipment is bought with federal dollars, and we can't put any of our equipment on a city street.
Wow.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
It's like it just killed it. Just, yeah. You know what I mean? And it still kind of bugs me that we couldn't. I mean, even if they were paid for with federal dollars, if we're doing good things for the community on both sides, in the county and in the city. Why couldn't we make that work? But, you know, our wonderful rules are what they are, and we need to try and work through them on the backside.
I know it doesn't make for good governance, but I always just kind of want, in situations like that, if people could just go, can we all just agree not to tell anybody? All right.
Right.
Just as a community, we all know. Yes.
Right.
But just don't tell Sacramento, don't tell Washington.
It just makes me realize that you and Lori are unique in that, and that your districts share, you know, your governing bodies overlap with the other governing body in this community, which is the Crescent City Council. So, you know, where do you, especially for your district, do you have to compromise to a certain extent in what you'd like to accomplish? You know, maybe it requires working with the city more, which obviously you can do because you've worked on the city council and the planning commission.
Yeah, maybe I can.
Yeah, or will it be like the road situation in which you seems like you should be able to work together, but you actually can't?
Right.
As far as the overlapping, what do you want to say? Boundaries, I guess. I think we can work to support each other when we can. Obviously, when the rules say we can't, because. Don't you put that paver down on that city.
Yeah.
You know?
What's boss's paver doing on the road here?
Right. You know, it was the wheel loader.
I mean, my vision was, especially, we talked about half of Front Street getting fixed. That is from H Street West.
Right.
That drainage project was for residential areas, and that kind of made it so the east of H Street was out because it primarily affects businesses. But if we could, you know, had my vision worked out, you know, bring those pavers down to Front Street when we fired up the pavement plant and do the rest of it while they're there. It's the cheapest, you know, I've had so many people say to me, I understand that road was built on sand and there's logs and they're like, I don't want to hear it anymore. Just fix the stupid street. Just pave over it. I don't care what it needs to have done under it.
You know, that's not a sustainable situation, right?
Yeah.
No, and you know, a lot of people say that wouldn't be the wisest thing to do with the city's dollar. But then there's the other opinion that road is absolutely terrible.
Yeah, yeah.
And we need to do something about it sooner than later.
It's like driving Low Divide. It's like
Low Divide's smoother. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Wow.
I want to be there when they rip the road up.
Right?
I'm just saying, because I want to see what's underneath it.
Right. It's all that's
all the redwood logs and the debris and stuff that was. Yeah.
That'd be interesting.
It will be fun to watch. That's true. That is true.
We'll have to give Eric Weir his own show, and he can. That would be awesome. Well, no, I guess he's city manager now. He doesn't get it. He doesn't get up to his elbows in dirt out there anymore.
Oh no!
Does he?
Oh yeah, he, I'm sure he does.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
I was going to say Eric's got clean fingernails now. No. But no, he gets into it.
16 minutes after 11, we're sort of nearing the hour that we blocked off for this. I want to throw this out there. Is there something that we haven't addressed that you would like to address about your vision for Del Norte County, for District 1, anything at all?
You know, I think we've covered most of it. Mm-hmm. I like we said earlier, I don't have any hidden agendas. You know, no pet projects, really. We talked about some of the major things that we've got to focus on, and you know, keep that ball rolling on Last Chance Grade.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Down Last Chance Grade, maybe. Maybe we shouldn't say
that. Yeah. Yeah. I don't want to go down Last Chance Grade.
I can't imagine. I'd like to, and at some point, I'd like to walk the other routes too. I mean, I've heard it never occurred to me that there are slides on the backside of that too. Just the same thing, yeah. And that's
some minor ones, but they're trying to, you know, the geotechnical engineer mm-hmm. said you were trying to shy away from those.
Mm-hmm.
We saw it on the bypass down at Newton B. Drury, you know, the mm-hmm. Oric bypass. When that opened up, there was still some slides that happened in that, but it's some minor stuff.
Yeah.
That we'll have to work through, and they're just trying to build a project where they won't have to experience that when they're done. But
I don't know if anybody else does things like this, but I drive the bypass down there by Newton, and oftentimes I'll just take the old road anyway because I like that driving through it.
Yes. Uh-huh.
But when I have to go over the I think to myself, and this is such a goon, such a nerdy thing to think, I think, what a wonderfully engineered road. Because it really is. I mean, it's the curves are the right, you know, uh-huh. the banking's right. I'm like, wow, right on. Good for us.
Yeah. It is wonderfully engineered. And all the drainage
mm-hmm,
that
right,
you had to,
right.
Yeah, it's... It is a pretty incredible road. Yeah. And the bridge. The bridge that's on the south side of it.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Multi-level. You mm-hmm. know, it starts higher and ends lower, and it's a curve.
Yeah.
To build that bridge cost as much as the rest of the project.
Wow.
So,
wow.
Kind of puts into perspective when they say that they may want to build a bridge into the canopy of
right,
the old
right.
forest so they don't.
And it also puts into perspective, too, when you talk about, you know, okay, we're going to break ground in 2031. It's going to take 7-8 years to finish this. Because,
right.
yeah, that's not just – at the outset, remember Bob talking about, you know, he and Chuck Blackburn were going to get together and, you know, with the bulldozer, and we'll have the bypass done in 5 years. And there's a part of me that was like, yeah. And then I'm like, wait a minute. Maybe there's more that needs to go into this than.
Yeah. And initially I thought, you know, I worked at Miller Redwood and have driven quite a few of the back roads that was mm-hmm. was Relum Redwood property. And there's some good, I mean, you have to build a good road if you're going to drive an off-highway logging truck.
Yeah.
That's carrying, you know, our highway trucks carry. Or they weigh 40 tons.
Mm-hmm.
Just the load on the off-highway trucks was 100 tons.
Wow.
So, so there was some really good roads built back there.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was my thought was, let's just use those routes and get through there. But then you think about it, there is a lot of switchbacks.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, not the widest parts of the road in there. So you know, initially I was like, yeah, we can get it done. Yeah, fast. Yeah, yeah. You know, we'll throw some pavement down. Stripe it. We'll be good. You know?
Get Hemmingson on the phone. Right? Let's get
it. Right. But there's quite a bit more to
there's
it.
More
than
to
it. Yeah.
So as we said when we started this, we're coming into the home stretch. You have special events. You have anything out there you want to hit the people to?
No more events. No more events. Knocking on doors. I was at home right before the radio show, putting stickers on on some postcards that I'm going to send out. You know, one last little push.
What do you have planned for election night?
There is a vacant shop that's on 3rd Street, and I'm going to put on a little shindig and do the watch party and,
right.
you know, invite friends and family and just have a good time.
So is it cool if
relax.
We stop by because we're organizing?
Yeah, we might crash it.
Yeah. kind of
well,
a...
Well, heck yeah.
All right, all right.
Awesome.
Cool. Yeah, that'd be great.
We've got a big election night planned with the youth journalists we have in our in KFUG Community News as well. So
oh,
we're gonna
good deal.
Get out into the community and
well,
get
yeah.
people on the phone and
come
do
have
stuff,
a snack
yeah.
or two. And,
right on.
Yeah,
great.
That'd be great.
Okay, cool.
Love to see you guys.
Well, Darren, anything else? Anything you want to add?
No.
All right.
No, this has been great. Thank you, Jessica and
thank
Paul.
You.
All right. Thanks for coming
been
in.
Cool to have. Yeah, this is the first time I've ever been on radio, so
I'll apologize for that, because you've been in government for so long, and this is the first time, so
this is it.
We'll have you back on a regular basis.
Good deal.
All right, Darren Short, thanks for joining us today. It is, what time is it? 21 minutes into the 11 o'clock hour. We're going to get back into the music after a couple of underwriting announcements. And coming up at the top of the hour, we've got Lynn Szabo and Health Matters.